Bulimia sucks, but you don't, and here's why. The Bulimia Sucks podcast with Kate Hudson Hall will teach you how to begin breaking through the multitude of thoughts, feelings, triggers, and urges to empower yourself to change your painful behaviors completely. You will hear proven strategies and solutions to help you in your recovery, including real interviews with real people. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon. And now, another episode of Bulimia Sucks, the podcast.
Hi, my name is Kate Hudson Hall, and thank you for listening to Bulimia Sucks, because I think we know that it actually does. And this is a platform for people to share relatable and uplifting and inspiring conversations based on bulimia and anorexia and other eating disorders. And these are real stories from people who are suffering or have suffered an eating disorder. And episodes will include their personal stories of where they are now and their difficult journeys and their steps taken in their recovery, and also to professionals who work with people with an eating disorder. Now, I'm very excited to say our guest today is Queenie June Borgman. And she was born and raised in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and she is a registered dietitian. And Queenie is here today to share her story with her experience with her eating disorder. And Queenie also is the founder of I Am Stuffed, where she helps her clients with issues around food and exercise and so much more, and she's going to be sharing with us here today. So welcome, Queenie. It's fabulous to have you here.
Thank you so much. I find it very nice to be on the opposite side of not interviewing somebody, but being a guest. So I enjoy this very much.
It's great to have you here. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So let's start off. Now, have you got a funny story for us, Queenie?
I have. And I forgot about it because it's many years ago, but I was with a colleague of mine and we were sharing funny food stories. And a few years ago, I was in a very, secluded farmy type of part in Germany. And for us, you know, we had our own bungalow, we made our own food, and we had this dish, and we still have this dish in the Netherlands called nasi. And nasi actually is rice with egg and ham and greens, just a good fried rice dish. But for us, it's something that is so used to, you know, called nasi, that when the neighbor that asked me, that came from the farm, said, you know, what did you eat yesterday? I said, nasi. And he was like, because they heard Nazi, they were like, what the on hell did you eat yesterday? And it gave me the most awkward situation ever, because they were like, what? And how do you like explain that? So it's still something I look back to and can laugh about, but it just shows with language what miscommunications can do. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, that's so funny. So Queenie, so tell us about your experience with your eating disorder.
Well, for me, I had a little bit of a cluster. It's OSFAT in this case, so that you have like not one type of eating disorder, but different. And for me, it was anorexia and binge eating, most prominently, not purging per se. So for me, I didn't have the bulimia part, but I did have over-exercising and orthorexia, bigorexia, the whole, you know, fun package. And it was a lot. It took me eventually around 7 years to say now I am fully recovered and do not have any bits and pieces of it anymore. And it was hard and a little bit, I'm a very stubborn person. Well, not maybe now, but back in the day I was. So when I first met the dietitian that helped me out, she was like, I think you may have an eating disorder. And I was like, no. And eventually throughout the process, I discovered that I did. And when she said, I think you maybe, you know, can benefit from psychological help, I was also like, no, because I don't need a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And nowadays I'm like, it would be so nice just to have somebody to splur your thoughts on. So back in the day, very stubborn, and it cost me more time, I think, to recover, because at the end of the day, it was just me and a dietitian for some time, and eventually just me trying to fight my own thoughts and trying to get good habits again in my system.
Right, right. So you didn't have any help from a therapist or?
No.
It was just the dietitian.
It was just a dietitian, and she was there for 3 months very intensively. And eventually I had a relapse, and then it became less prominent, you know, her advice and her being there. And she still was like always somewhere in my WhatsApp, and I couldn't app her and stuff like that. But she wouldn't always respond, because let's be honest, if I look to the Netherlands, we have 3 hours of in our insurance, in our health insurance, to help and support people with nutritional advice. And the amount of hours it took me to like heal, it doesn't add up, and it doesn't pay well for the dietitian as well. So yeah. When I was like totally like broken or something, she would contact me or say, okay, let's meet up. But most of the time it was just me apping, and I know she read it, and then she was like guesstimating on how bad is it or how not bad is it.
Yeah. So Quinny, what do you feel? So you had, you know, you were sort of wrapped up in this bundle of confusion with your eating disorders. What do you think was that first guiding light that helped you to take that first step on your recovery pathway, do you think?
I think for me, it was extreme hunger. I really dreaded it. I hated it. I still find it something that's very scary, because we are so used to and brought up to that we have control on what we think and what we do. And we are humans. We are superior maybe to other animal species. And then you come at a part, I think, when you have extreme hunger, that your primal part take over. And it's something that we do not meet often in ourselves, because of all the luxury we have. We have enough food, we have drinking water, at least at most places. And when that part came, it was really like, oh, you know, this is so scary. that I need to like take some action.
Right. So it was that deep scared feeling, I suppose.
Yeah. I was so sick of it. I was like, every time you went from a restrictive way of eating on, or at least trying to eat restrictive, to a very extreme hunger. I would describe it as a very big binge. And of course, binging is uncontrollably, but there is a split second of making a choice for a binge or not. And this, there's no choice. It's just your body eating. And when it's done, you kind of come back again and realize what you've done.
Okay. And what was the first thing that you did? What, once you decided that you couldn't take any more of that specific scared feeling, what was the first thing that you did?
Well, this is a funny story, and I think even my uni doesn't know this, but the first thing I did somehow was, okay, I need help, and I need a dietitian, and where's the place that all the dietitians are at? Well, that's the University of Applied Sciences, where they teach dietitians to become dietitians. So I called there and I said, you know, I need some help. Maybe I can help a student out that needs to do something for a project, and they can guide me. But the lady, of course, said, we can't do that, because my specific problem wasn't something that you want to put next to a student. And she gave me 3 people that were graduated, that had their own practice or were working for quite some time. And from those 3 people, I had the decision on who to choose to like help me out. And one was a male, and somehow for me back then, having my eating disorder and discussing it with a male, it wasn't something that I think would click. Other lady was quite Ayurveda-ish, a little bit more, I wouldn't say other dimension, because that's not nice, but more on the an other type of healing people. And I didn't think it would suit me back then, because of the physical part that I had on being malnourished. And then I had this lady that was around my age, and she had a practice. It was very near. It was maybe on walking distance, like 15 minutes. And I thought, you know, this will be the lady that I think I can click with. And that's the lady that eventually helped me out through the, through the times.
Gosh. Wow. That's, and what do you feel, Queenie, were the real keys that helped you in your recovery?
But the keys that really helped me, I think having a stable food pattern, as in really having 3 meals a day and maybe 2 or 3 snacks, because when I did that, my extreme hunger went away. And when I relapsed and didn't do that anymore, I got my problem with binging back, basically, but then binging and that extreme hunger. So that part, I think, is very important. When it comes down, but I don't know if it's something that's in the UK. I do know that's here in the Netherlands. For me, Proud to Be Me helped a lot. And that is kind of like a NADA site, but a little bit more to the public. So they have Instagram lives every Friday. They write articles that are very common, and all the people that are in that team either have had an eating disorder or work with people with eating disorders. Right. So it's very relatable. And still, I think every week now and then I check out their posts and read them, because it's not always about eating disorders, but also self-esteem or nice recipes, stuff like that. They help me out a lot. And furthermore, I think just having the mindset of not giving up. Because in my head, it was like, you know, I write my own story, and I wouldn't want to have this to be the end of my story, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So you joined up with this group. You had access to it.
Well, yeah, Proud to Be Me has a forum.
What's it called?
Proud to Be Me.
Oh, Proud to Be Me. Oh,
yes. Lovely. And they have a forum, they have a chat, and you can talk there as well and talk about your issues. But it isn't, of course, the same as therapy, because you cannot go into details as I think the person that's on the other side, because you need to give your equal attention to everybody. And when it comes down to weight and stuff people eat or don't eat, it can be triggering. So a lot of stuff is filtered as well, just in case not to hurt the other person. So I think at the end of the day, it's a good stepping stone, but it's isn't the same as therapy by all means.
Yeah. It's not. What guided you towards, you know, where you are now? And was it the help that you had in your recovery?
Yeah, the funny thing is a lot of people ask me that, and they always think it's because of the eating disorder that I maybe wanted to be around food and stuff like that. But I get, because a lot of people who go on that education, on that bachelor, and do have an eating disorder tend to have that. But for me, it really was on how the dietitian changed my life in such a short period of time, like 3 months. I was like, wow, that is so cool. I wish I could do that for other people as well. And before I was very much searching on, you know, what is really me, because I came from sales, and sales can be very cold-hearted and all about the money. And it wasn't something that really fit me. Of course, you know, money is nice, but it's also nice when it has a certain cost that you did that brought the money. And for me, it really fitted more my personality to help people out and then receive a certain payment than just sell a product and get paid for it. So basically that.
Yeah. And so what would be, say, 3 powerful suggestions that you would give to somebody right now that's thinking about stepping onto that recovery path, or even on that recovery path?
Suggestions. When it comes down to eating, because I find this very risky because everybody's so different, but for example, going vegan for recovery, mainly maybe because you're afraid of certain foods that have dairy or meat, I wouldn't recommend that, actually. Maybe in the beginning, but not further or later on, because you're still in that disorder eating habit, because becoming vegan can be for a lot of other things, sustainability, animal cruelty, stuff like that. And I rather think that the purpose of having a vegan lifestyle would be more that than you trying to still give a little bit into your eating disorder. So I think that part is very important, because otherwise, of course, your weight restored, but you still don't have, you haven't debunked your food, fear foods.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I think it's very important to find somebody that you can, you know, drop your story on or your thoughts. And not everybody's, of course, willing to do that. So find somebody that is really genuinely interested for that, or maybe do have a therapist, because not everybody has family and friends to, you know, listen to that, basically.
Yeah, having that support, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because at some point, if you're so alone with your thoughts and you're always only with your thoughts, those thoughts maybe can become the truth. And something that I discovered was that not everything that I think needs to be true. And I think that's very important.
Absolutely. And we do. We believe. Majority of people believe what they think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's very risky. Very risky. Because just hearing somebody else's opinion about you and the different perspective, it can really give you yourself a different perspective on how you are and how people perceive you. Although that, of course, shouldn't be the main thing for you on how people perceive you. But it does show that not everything and not every bad thought of you about you is true.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because we believe everything that we think or people do. And most of it isn't true.
Yeah, at least, you know, the same thing for me, for example, a few years back, although that I was doing very well, for me, it was never enough. And sometimes when I speak with people, they like remember me on, you know, Queenie, you already did this. And, you know, we are not even there. And you're doing a great job, although you maybe don't feel that way. So that is always, you know, a good confirmation or something in that way.
Yeah. And statistics show that 80% of our thoughts, we have 60,000 different thoughts that go through our mind every day. And 80% of those thoughts are negative thoughts. And then 95% of those thoughts are the same thoughts that we had yesterday. So, you know, it's actually listening to what's going on in your head and thinking, okay, well, you know, what am I going to change here?
Yeah. It's most definitely. And maybe the last thing I would say, but I think it's very controversial because not everybody agrees with the way I approach it. But I would see your eating disorder tendencies as a habit, and not something that is a full-on illness that never will go away and that you're stuck to. Because if that is the way you go into recovery, you're making yourself it way more harder. You just see it as something like smoking. It isn't good for you. It does something bad to your body. And you can get rid of the way, you know, of smoking. So you can get rid of restriction or over-exercising, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Queenie, if somebody came to you as a dietitian, and what guidance and help do you give them? Sort of a rough overall.
Yeah,
I know everybody's different, but
that should be very rough. Well, is the person that is coming to me, is that a person with an eating disorder, or and a specific type, or just
say bulimia?
Okay, well, of course, it varies per person and what is really the biggest issue from their eating disorder, because everybody has different elements. But one of the foremost things is that I have a 7 days chat service, so they can always app me, chat me, stuff like that. So we can really like go head on the problem when it's there and not wait until 4 weeks until you see me again, because I don't find that very helping in any way. Sometimes I help out by like having breakfast or dinner with them. And that sounds maybe a little bit strange, but through FaceTime or WhatsApp, if that burden or that feeling is so high of anxiety on eating stuff and maybe wanting to purge afterwards, I just stick with them for like the meal and a half an hour afterwards, just to let that anxiety go away. So these types of things I try to like do, basically to be more invested than just giving a food schedule and adjust it throughout the time and see you once per 4 weeks or something.
Yeah. I like that. That's excellent.
A lot of people are like, doesn't that take a lot of time? But I think if you're so devoted for changing that, it isn't work. For me, at least, it isn't work. It's something that I do with pleasure, and it's not something negative for me or something.
Yeah. So if somebody came to you that had bulimia, so you would give them a, you would talk, obviously talk to them about nutrition and what else would you do?
Well, when it comes down to a food schedule, because I said food schedule, but not every time there will be a food schedule, because sometimes guidelines, depending on how the person is also something that can work out. Some people get binges and get because of that purging thoughts or feelings because of being fixed to a food schedule. So it really depends per person. If they get guidelines, they're maybe more free with that as well. Sometimes we can go and tackle a list of fair foods that they made up, and then we're going through that. And when it comes down to purging, well, we talk a lot about distraction, you know, same when it comes down with binging, go and distract yourself, go call somebody, go for a walk. And sometimes I'm totally up for that and I'm like, go and do that, but you're not addressing the problem. So sometimes I do just ask people to just sit there and let that come up, that feeling. And you'll maybe feel it for a half an hour. You maybe feel it for an hour, but eventually it will surpass. And these types of methods are something that I also use, because otherwise you're really running around the bush and not addressing the problem by distracting always. So yeah,
absolutely. In my book I talk about urge surfing, so the mindfulness practice of urge surfing and sitting with that feeling and riding that wave.
Yes,
negative
definitely.
Feelings
I also use, it's called in Dutch G-schedules. I do not know what the translation is for in English, but they're all words that start with a G. And then it's mostly like, if I, what did you taught? Why did you taught it? If you're going to do it, what will be the outcome? And that doing it an outcome is very important, because for people with binging or with purging, you can actually list the pros and the cons on what is going to happen if you're going to purge and what is going to happen if you do not purge.
Yeah. So tell us about I Am Stuffed. So what happens? What is the company?
Well, I Am Stuffed actually came about during the time that I had binges. So it was somewhere in 2017 that I started it up. And always when I just overate or had binges, somehow my dad would always come and said, you know, do you want a bite of this or do you want to have a meal, blah, blah, blah. And I was always like, no, thanks, Dad. I'm stuffed. And eventually that was something that I needed to say so many times that it became my company name, because one, it's a very funny name to have for a dietitian, because being stuffed isn't something people associate with being a dietitian. And it also is a little bit of a wink to the days that I had my eating disorder. And I started it basically when I had my eating disorder, but I hoped, of course, that when I was actually done with my degree, that I wouldn't have it anymore, but still could have that little, you know, throwback to the time that I basically started it when I had my eating disorder. So when I started out, I actually did blogs for influencers in the Netherlands when it came around food. So people that are cooks, recipes, stuff like that,
right.
Or fitness type of ish, sciencey-ish influencers. And eventually when I finished, I was like, okay, finished as in my bachelor degree, I'm going to start my company now, and I want to have that main message of that disordered eating is something that will be tackled here. And a lot of people come in and they do not know that they have disordered eating tendencies, and a lot of people come in and have eating disorders and come to ditch those tendencies as well. So they're very different groups.
Yeah,
because I think a lot, I still think like 2/3 of the people that get supported by me are people with a weight loss goal. But when they come in, they do not know what there's, you know, underlying stuff that is going on. So first we tackle that, and then the weight loss either comes automatically or comes throughout the time.
Yeah.
And I at least experience that people with eating disorders are very hesitant in seeking help or maybe do not have a lot of budget as well. So that makes it very, in my personal opinion, sad to see that that is a group that is struggling very heavily, but either they cannot finance it or they're too scared to seek help. Yeah. And that's something that I see back in my company as well. And a lot of other people, either coaches or therapists that I know for eating disorders as well. It is a big threshold, I believe.
Absolutely. Particularly with bulimia, I think it's such a big secret.
Yeah, binge eating. And I think everybody, every eating disorder feels like a dirty secret, at least in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So are there any sort of specific resources that you would suggest people that have an eating disorder right now? Any resources that you would suggest for them to be able to take away?
I think it's very different. Some people get an eating disorder without a lot of knowledge about food, and then they just do something and end up in a very toxic way. So sometimes I think it is a good idea to get more knowledge about foods, because some people can get a lot of freedom and relaxation to know, oh, I can do this and still not gain weight and stuff like that. But that is a very specific group, because some people can also turn it into something toxic. So it really depends who that is that needs to hear that. But I do think that a little bit more knowledge about food, if you stop, you know, randomly wanted to lose weight but didn't know what you were doing and now it spiraled out of control, can be beneficial. I think for the Dutchies, Proud to Me is very beneficial, because it really is a community. Oh, that you,
sorry, what is it?
The Proud to Be Me site.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so for the Dutchies, it is very beneficial to go to a community where there are guidelines, so you cannot influence each other in a bad way, but still can share your story.
So finding a community where they've got specific guidelines to support yes. each other.
Yeah, because otherwise there are a lot of pro ANA sites out there. They're very toxic. I actually once went there for like 10 seconds or something throughout my eating disorder. And I was like, wow, this place is so dangerous. I'm going to exit because this is not a good place.
Yes.
So
very triggering.
Very triggering. Mm. So the positive sites like NADA, stuff like that, really use them to your advantage. And I think also Instagram can be a very good source. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of triggering accounts as well. And I always report them if I find them, because I don't think it's in any way needed to share that information with other people. But there are accounts there like Binge Eating Dietitian, or people, the Hormone Dietitian, or influencers that share their story on their journey and how they find balance now. That can be very motivating. So I don't think Instagram or YouTube is per se a negative place for people with eating disorders. It's just how you intend to watch that video, with looking for triggers, or intend to watch it with a recovery mindset and make something different from it.
So Queenie, how can people find you?
That's a good question. They can find me at Instagram at imstuff_com. When it comes down to the podcast, it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Overcast. It is imstuff_podcast. And I have the site imstuff.nl, and there are all my services. There's blogs or whatever, ebooks out there as well on eating disorders. So basically that.
Excellent. Good. So of course, we'll post all the links below so people can find you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Oh, Queenie, well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I love doing this. I love just exploring all my info, hoping that somebody can pick something out. They cherry pick something that is valuable and get them going on recovery.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
So that's all for today's episode of Bulimia Sucks. And thank you for listening. And thank you to Queenie for sharing her journey and giving us some insightful, inspirational help in our recovery pathways. And join us again to the next episode of Bulimia Sucks. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes so you never miss an episode. Plus, if you haven't already heard about it, check out my book, Bulimia Sucks, which is on Amazon, to learn many different techniques to help you to begin to break through your painful bulimic behaviors. And soon, well, actually now, the Bulimia Sucks personal food journal is available also on Amazon to help you through your recovery. And so that's it really for today. So thanks for listening to Queenie and I. And before we go, let us know what you think and show some love, your favorite podcast, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And make sure you come and join my Facebook group, Bulimia Sucks, if you haven't already done, and where it's great to connect with others and talk about, you know, related common topics. So thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you in the next episode.
Bulimia Sucks, but you don't. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon.